now, a word from one of our dream sponsors, Miller Lite Bowling Tournament, circa 1982.
The score's all even!
Last frame, who's up?
Rodney.
Rodney!
You gotta be a mistake.
Hey, are you kidding? It's a piece of cake.
All we need is one pin, Rodney.
Like beer from Miller. Everything you always wanted in a beer, and less.
Ken, I didn't get my turn yet. I'm gonna break this time.
Well, pour yourself a glass, sit for a spill. It's time to have some fun. Let's do a little thinking, some picking and a drinking. Well, this is what we're drinking with Dan Dunn.
Happy St. Paddy's Day week, everybody. You may be wondering, St. Paddy's Day week, is that a thing? Yes, it's a thing. I just made it one. Come on, let's celebrate. Let's party. Yeah. Coming up on this episode of What We're Drinking, we've got our East Coast co-host returning to the show. Actor Colin Donnell will be here. We love Colin. Also on this program, Johnny Egan, director and brand custodian of Egan's Irish Whiskey. We are all about the Irish whiskey during St. Paddy's Day week, which is a thing. This time last year, maybe a week or so ago this time last year, I had just returned from Ireland. I was hanging out with the guys from Egan's over there and some other brands. That was the last trip I took. That was it. I've not been on an airplane since, but I do see the light at the end of the tunnel, and that light is coming from a bar, and I shall return. I want to remind you to check out and download Stereo. Stereo is the social media app for the podcasting world. When I go on Stereo, you get to join the conversation live by pressing a button, you record a message, and you hit send. And me and whoever I'm doing the show with, usually it's Colin Donnell, we'll play that message and we'll respond to it. It's a lot of fun. So much fun. And the stuff we talk about on Stereo is, you know, a departure from what I'm doing here on this show. Stereo, it's just shoot from the hip. Shoot from the hip. And Colin and I are going to be doing that live on the Stereo app this Thursday, March 18th at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific time. I would love for you to join us. All you got to do is download the Stereo app and follow me at stereo.com/Dan Dunn. This is your chance to finally unburden yourself of all these questions you've been wanting to ask me or Colin Donnell. So download the app and join us live this Thursday, March 18th, 8 p.m. Eastern on Stereo. And speaking of pressing a button, recording a message, and hitting send, I love hearing from you. And beginning right now, this episode, I will be addressing your questions and comments and whatnot. I don't know what whatnot is, but whatever the what, surprise me with the whatnot. Do it right here on this show as it's happening, as the show's happening. In fact, I've got two voicemails to get. Are they voice messages, voice memos, voice stuff, recordings? I'll stop now. Let's have at it. The first one is from Kristen. She sent me this via email and used some sort of voice masking technology. Maybe she's worried her employer will hear this question, but let's hear what Kristen wants to know about.
Hello?
I've been working from home for a year because of COVID, and I've gotten used to having a few glasses of wine during the day. Looks like I'm going to have to go to the office soon. And I've been thinking, should companies allow employees to drink small amounts of alcohol while at work? Maybe not permanently, but at least until we've reacclimated to so-called normal life?
Oh, good question, Kristen. All right, listen, as one of the only handful of individuals in this country who can legitimately list professional boozer as my occupation on a tax return, I've often wondered what it must be like to operate under the behavioral constraints of a more conventional vocation in a traditional workplace. You know, like a paralegal tech type thingy or telecommunications, house of what's it, or... Every time I ponder such a scenario, I always come to the same conclusion, that it would suck donkey balls. For me, not for you, for me. Anyways, yeah, that's what I mean, to me. It's not that I think there's anything wrong with having a stable career and a respectable profession that provides a steady income. Especially, you know, if you got a family to support, and God knows there are too many deadbeats in this world already. Yes, I'm talking to you, Dad. Hell, I'm not even averse to the notion of settling into a regular routine, just so long as it doesn't involve, you know, like, regularly having to go to work or stop drinking during what the rest of the world has collectively come to define as work hours. And as Kristen alluded to, that's all changed during this pandemic. But still, some might call this extreme, but I'm just going to go ahead and call it what it is. Prejudice. That's right. It's an ugly word, but I don't know a better one to describe it. But unlike most prejudices, which tend to be rooted out by the light of reason, this one seems to be getting worse with time. Or at least, again, it was before the pandemic. You watch Mad Men, right? Mad Men? I mean, I love that show. Everybody loves that show. If you watch that show, you know there was a time not so long ago in this country when drinking was not only tolerated in the workplace, it was practically mandatory. In the 1960s, alcohol was celebrated as a social lubricant that made going to the office as much fun as going home to your dysfunctional family afterwards was not. But, you know, attitudes change, and sadly getting schnockered on the clock down at the old ad agency became as outmoded a social convention as smoking during pregnancy or spanking your kids in public, throwing garbage at Native Americans on the interstate. Everybody remember that commercial? Am I dating myself? Remember the commercial? I think I would pick it up and a tear rolled down his cheek. I miss that commercial. Look, I'm sure it's great to be a highly paid doctor, lawyer, or operator of heavy machinery, but let's face it, nobody in their right mind would ever hire a lush to argue cases in court or do gastric bypass surgery or dig up the street for a new cast main. That last one does sound like it'd be fun after you've had a couple, though, right? Or would they be crazy? So a few years back, I came across this study that suggested boozing can be good for business. Paper was called Uncorking the Muse. Alcohol intoxication facilitates creative problem solving. Yes, somebody wrote that. And in that paper, they tested the effects of moderate alcohol intoxication on creative problem solving, and they found that people who were buzzed were able to perceive solutions faster and more frequently than these fucking nerds that hadn't consumed any alcohol, which confirms what I've always known in my gut to be true. After all, I spent significant amount of time working with the folks at Playboy, where up until Hef died, they'd maintained a liberal drink at work policy. And hey, 70 years of results spoke for themselves, right? Beautiful naked lady parts in every issue, hundreds upon hundreds of hilarious cartoons of guys banging their secretaries, and the magnum opus of celebrity reportage, David Renson's 1983 masterpiece, 20 Questions with Yakov Smirnoff. If you can find that issue, get it. It's beautiful. All right, so Kristen, drinking at work might not be a good idea for every profession. There's the obvious ones with safety concerns, such as like a pilot or lifeguard or Lil Wayne. And you can bet your ass that your coworkers at the nuclear power plant aren't going to want to hear about your quote unquote artistic impulses. They find out you decided to replace the deionized water and liquid sodium in the core coolant with Dr. Pepper and margarita mix. Now, let's face it, no one at the Apple store is going to start comparing you to Steve Jobs after you unveil the giant vodka luge you created out of hundreds of disassembled iPhones. But it's not all happy news. It isn't. That report is not all happy news. Indeed, the authors of Uncorking the Muse also found a far darker wrinkle during their investigations, one that points back to that old devilish prejudice. You knew I'd bring that back, right? You knew it. I mean, if I don't speak up, then who? Who? So despite the fact that drinking has been proven to stimulate creativity, those who drink are perceived by others as less intelligent, thanks to something called the imbibing idiot bias. You don't even need to drink to be tarred with this brush. As the study stated, even people who hold an alcoholic beverage are perceived to be less intelligent than those who do not. So, Kristen, I hope I'm answering your question here, and I will say this. Against oppression on this kind of unconscious level, we're left with only one option. We got to go underground. You mentioned wine. Maybe you're also a bourbon in the bottom drawer kind of gal. Perhaps you could go for the, this is totally coffee in my venti Starbucks cup full of beer ploy. You could always brew up a nice batch of toilet wine under your desk.
All right, all right, all right.
All right, Kristen, let's get some work done. Next question comes from John in New York.
Hello?
Hey, Dan, it's John from New York. Big fan of the show, but why don't you ever talk about beer? I mean, Homer Simpson, dude. Like, why do you got to be so fancy? Talk about beer.
Hey, you better go! I'm gonna go! If you do not!
All right, I'll admit it. I don't cover beer that often on the show. And the reason, really, is that the older I've gotten, the less I've moved away from beer. I used to drink it a lot back in my formative years, my 20s, even into my early 30s. I drank a lot of beer. And then I got it into my head that beer was causing me to get fat. And it probably wasn't. I mean, more so than, say, cocktails. And I know that that's not really true, at least not if you're drinking lagers and whatnot. And anyway, to that end, I'll say this to you, John. I've actually got David Walker coming up in about two episodes from now. David Walker from Firestone Walker Brewing Company. Firestone Walker is one of the original sort of craft breweries in the United States. They've been around for 25 years out of the central coast of California. And David really, I already had the conversation with him, so we're going to run that in a future episode. And he really opened my eyes. I think you're going to be seeing a lot more beer on this show. A lot more beer. So with that, I invite you to send me your questions, comments, random thoughts to info at whatwe'redrinking.com. There's no apostrophe in the were there. It's just whatwe'redrinking.com. info@whatwe'redrinking.com. We prefer it if you send an audio file because I like hearing your voices. But you could also just type it out, traditional question, whatever. And I'm going to get to those things. I'm going to do them. I like to do that every week now. I want this to be a two-way street. It's like the stereo of podcasts.
This is Colin Donnell, and you are listening to my favorite podcast that begins with the letter W. Take that, Marc Maron.
Well, this is certainly exciting. Back, it feels like it's been forever. It really does. And I miss this guy whenever he's not on the show for this long. And I think I feel like I've been derelict in my duty as the host for not having him on. He is the East Coast co-host of What We're Drinking with Dan Dunn. You may also know him from some of this acting stuff he's done. He was on Chicago Med. He was on The Affair. He was on Arrow. He's on Broadway. He's a musician. He's got albums out. He's got all kinds of things going. But again, really, I think we can all agree the thing he does best is East Coast co-host of What We're Drinking with Dan Dunn, and that would be Mr. Colin Donnell. What's up, brother?
Hey, man. How you doing?
It's good to see you. It's been a couple of months, right, since you've been on?
It's been a couple of months. Yeah, I mean, we've talked, obviously.
Yeah, we talk. We do the stereo thing. We've been doing that.
Yeah, we do the stereo thing.
There's like nine people listen to us on stereo.
We've got some diehard fans, let me tell you.
I don't get it, man, because like you have a big following on social media. I have a decent following, but this show gets people and I promote it. And then we get on this stereo and there's like 10 people. But you know what? Those 10 people say a lot of weird things and I appreciate that.
I do appreciate somebody calling in or, you know, voice messaging in like they do on stereo and just rambling in another language. That was my favorite, I think.
Maybe we'll do one this week. Maybe we'll do it. Yeah. We'll do some with this Irish whiskey. We got this Egan's Irish whiskey that we're drinking. And speaking,
sure do.
Yeah, speaking of that, I normally I'd just like to kick it with you, my friend, but we've got a special, special guest here. He is the director and brand custodian of Egan's Irish whiskey, and we are going to get into it with Johnny Egan. How are you, buddy?
How's it going, guys?
Hey,
thanks,
man,
for having me on the show.
It's a pleasure having you, man, and thanks for the whiskey.
Absolutely,
yeah,
absolutely. It's always great being on a Zoom call with a couple of fellas. I just wish you'd wore clothes this time.
That's right.
Yeah, Dan, you got a little thing coming out of your shoulder there.
What is it? Oh, it's the microphone. I've got a Zoom.
No, it's and a rock.
And a rock. Yeah.
You got a chip on your shoulder, bud.
Between a rock and a hard place.
I got a Zoom background going on. I'm trying to get into the spirit of things this St. Paddy's Day week. Johnny, I mentioned earlier in the show, this time last year, I just returned from the last trip that I took on an airplane, which was to Ireland, and I visited several places over there that make whiskey, but probably, and I mean this, the most memorable crew I hung out with were the guys from Egan's, and just had such a great time with them. I spent a couple of nights going out with them and drinking the whiskey, and
nights you'll never get back.
Right, I'm telling you.
You remember any of this? You remember any of it?
Little bits and pieces. Well, here's what I remember, honestly, in retrospect, is we're shoulder to shoulder with people in the pubs and never having the faintest idea that I was two weeks away. I was 2 weeks away from all of that coming to, we all were, all of that coming to a screeching halt. And here we are. Fucking year later.
Can you believe that this is the year anniversary?
It's a year, but we're gonna. Yeah. You know what, man? I am determined because Colin Staunton, who works for you over there in Egan's, mentioned that there was either a golf tournament or something that was gonna go on, and I'm a pretty good golfer, and he said, "Well, why don't you come back?" It was gonna be that summer, so I'm hoping maybe it'll be late summer, fall this year. I'll get a chance to get back to Ireland.
Ooh. Back to the Egan's Classic.
Is that what it's called? Is it called the Egan's Classic?
Yeah, everybody lies about their handicaps.
Perfect. I'll fit in. Where's my invite?
We fit with Colin Donald and Dan Dunn. No one will know. We just put on, you probably have it. Let me hear your Irish accent, Colin. You got to have a good one. You're an actor.
No. That's come on,
give us the
not.
Old broad, Colin, will you? Give
no,
us the
not on a, not on, see, my sister-in-law is Irish, and my biggest fear is actually having a job where I actually have to do an Irish accent and having to face the wrath of her just completely ripping me a new asshole.
For the love of sweet soul friend Jesus. No. No good, Johnny?
Yeah, guys.
Did I get the part?
Who's your favorite accent of all the actors and celebrities out there? Who do you think has done it the best?
That's not actually Irish?
Yeah.
Gillian Anderson.
Yeah.
She did it for the fall, right?
Yeah. that was a whopping first season that was. Yeah.
She is just brilliant. And she's such a, like, she seems like such a wonderful woman. And she was so good in that. Yeah. And her and Jamie Dornan playing opposite each other. I was blown away by that series.
Yeah. It was a great chemistry between the both of them. I really, really enjoyed that show. How did you fancy Brad Pitt in Snatch?
You couldn't understand what he was saying anyways, right?
I don't want to take a shite. I fight you for it. Yeah, we all thought he did a great job in that, you know.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
My favorite was an Irish actor doing a different accent, which was Liam Neeson in
anything?
In Schindler's List, right? And I once made up this thing called, I wrote a piece called the Liam Neeson Drinking Game. And one of the things was whenever in Schindler's List, whenever you picked up a slight Irish brogue, you had to raise your glass and go top of the morning to you, Hitler, and then do a shot. Yeah. You know, what was Schindler's List? I'm just saying. Yeah. You know, like
it was on brand. Yeah.
Yeah. It was on brand. Yeah. So I didn't love his accent, but didn't Tom Cruise do a really bad accent in Far and Away?
Yeah.
It was by far and away the worst Irish accent.
I see what you did there.
Well, what he at least he got a wife out of the show, right?
Didn't
he
marry Nicole? Oh, that's right. They met there. That's correct.
That's
right.
Movie. Yeah.
Now, Johnny, where are you from in Ireland?
Right. So I was born and raised, born and bred in the county of Kildare, which is just immediately west of Dublin. It's between County Dublin and County Offaly. And my father is from Tullamore, County Offaly, just where, you know, the whole provenance and history of Egan's begins. And so I spent, you know, obviously my youth in Ireland. And then when I got to my early 20s, I had to flee the nest. I actually took off out of Ireland and Europe altogether. I went to Asia, actually. I went to Taiwan and China for about 14 years immediately after university in Dublin.
You mentioned the history, Tullamore, with Egan's. Tell us a little bit about how far back this goes.
Sure. Absolutely. So five generations before me, I monarch myself as the sixth generation. And there was a gent named Patrick Egan Sr., we referred to him as. And he was a gent of Moat, County Westmeath. And he had a couple of different businesses there. He was also the Crown solicitor for West County Westmeath. And so he was a big advocate in the town. And he was a good schmoozer with the political class. And he addressed what we call the Great Redeemer, which is Daniel O'Connell. He was a, you know, he was a bit of a luminary in his own right, and he decided he wanted to expand his business, and he moved over to the bustling town of Tullamore, County Offaly. At that stage, Tullamore had a lot going for it. One of the main things was infrastructure development of the canal, and that canal artery was connecting Tullamore with the second busiest port in the British Empire at the time, which was Dublin. And he wanted to trade his commodities up to Dublin and export them. He was a pretty ambitious fella. And once his sons came onto the scene, that's the Patrick and Henry, the P&H of P&H Egan, they jumped into the business and they expanded it. They got into hotels, they got into bottling, they got into brewing, they got into whiskey bonding. And they grew that, and it went. The business went for five generations until the late 1960s. My dad was one of the last people there before many of the units of the business were sold off. So that was 1968, and then about 7 years ago, my close friend John Ralph and I, we decided to bring back the business, as it were, with some original family members, with the provenance that we had, the IP, and relaunch the brand. And so that's what we did about nearly 6 years ago now. We've been rocking and rolling ever since.
East Coast co-host, jump in there.
No, I love it. So, I mean...
We have not even raised the toast yet. We haven't raised the toast yet.
No, but I've been drinking, so...
Oh, yeah, hold on. Let's do this, first off.
Your glass is...
Who's doing the first toast?
Well, you got to do it, man. Irish have the best toast. The Irish have the best. So what do we got?
Okay. I wish you'd give me a little bit of a runway there.
I do the same thing to Colin. I'm like, go ahead, Colin. You pick this up and run with it.
You take over.
Yeah, go for it.
My friend does the Irish toast, and I'm just having an awful blank right now at the moment. I'll come back to me, right? I'm just going to pass the parcel over to Colin. You do the toast, and I'll do the next toast, okay?
Well, here's to the bottles that aren't drunk yet.
There we go. All right.
Cheers.
Schlancha.
Schlancha.
There are some great Irish toasts, and we will get into those, but before this goes out, I mentioned St. Paddy's earlier, Johnny, and I wanted to ask you, first off, St. Paddy's, I notice a lot of people spell it in the States, P-A-T-T-Y-S, the apostrophe S, that's a big no-no, right?
Oh my God, it's abhorrent. You know, people are, you know, a patty is what you put into a burger, right?
Yeah.
That's what a patty is. And Saint, you know, Patrick, he was a saint. So I think the least that we can do is you know, address him by his full name. We just squirm and just throw our eyes up to heaven when people start referring to it as St. Paddy's Day. I mean, come on.
And if you do Paddy's, at least have the decency to put the two D's, right?
Indeed.
Yeah, two D's.
Yeah.
It's the two D's.
Now, what is the difference between the celebration, in your opinion, the celebration here in the United States and the celebration over in Ireland?
Well, you know, ironically, people hardly ever believe me in this, but it's way more drunker here in the U.S. than it is.
Oh, I believe you.
No, I believe that.
And we moved to Chicago in the year of our Lord, 2015.
Oh.
And so 2016 was our
inaugural
St. Patrick's Day. And I think it actually fell on a Saturday or Friday or something like that. But the other way, they celebrated on the weekend. And I remember going downstairs. It was like 8:39 in the morning. I was going out to get a coffee. And as I was coming down in the elevator, all these people were coming in, like kind of swaying from side to side in green costumes. And they were already like hammered. And I was like,
8 o'clock in the morning.
What happened?
Yeah.
Oh, we had this, early party from 6 a.m. I was like, oh my God. I mean, Jesus, I'm almost ashamed of calling myself Irish. You guys here.
Tell me, Johnny, are you a fan of the Green River?
Yes. Yes.
In Chicago, right? They dye the river.
In Chicago, yeah. So every year they dye the river green.
That's right.
Have you guys gone down and watched them dye the river green yet?
Yes. Yes, we did actually. Yeah, we went down with my son and my wife there. Was it 2 years ago? We got to see it, and it was a great event. And nobody.
It's weird. It's weird.
Commercializing like the Americans do, right?
Yeah.
No, we thought it was cool.
Yeah, it is cool. I mean, and to tell you the truth, I Dan mentioned that I was on Chicago Med. We shot the show in Chicago, so I lived there basically from the time that you guys moved to Chicago. I was there at the same time, just until about a year and a half ago. And one of the first things when we were when Patty, my wife is named Patty, P-A-T-T-I.
Okay.
Not to be confused with St. Patty.
If you spell it P-A-D-D-I, will she get upset?
Yeah, I think she might be mad at that.
Part of the burger.
Yeah, she's. I don't refer to her as the burger Patty. She's only... she's a very lean burger Patty, if I'm going to say that. But we... Oh my God, that was dumb. Anyway,
that's the highlight clip, by the way. That's going right up on Instagram, and I'm tagging Patty on it. Yes.
Oh God. Hey, at least I mean, look. Hey. Anyway, we went down and I learned all about how they dye the river green, and they do it very very ecologically responsible. They don't put any toxins into the river. There's enough there already.
Yeah.
but it's fascinating to see it. And that motherfucker is neon green.
It's crazy.
Oh, yeah.
I'm telling you, like, you go and you look at it, and if it's a bright day, it is. And if it's a sunny day, that thing is like shining green light back onto your face. It's that vivid and green. It's so weird. But you're not wrong. There's, it's the same thing in New York. It's you go to the subway, if it falls on a weekday and you're going to work or you're going to do anything in the morning, chances are when you go down the steps into the subway station, you're going to have to be you're playing Frogger with drunk people along the way. And like the subway car that you're in, chances are it's going to smell like vomit.
I'm curious about the Green River. Is that a uniquely Chicago thing, or is that something that they adopted? Is that done anywhere in Ireland, Johnny, that you know of?
Not to the best of my knowledge. I think they may have done the Liffey.
They have a little more dignity over there, probably. Yeah.
But certainly nothing like the scale of Chicago. We did we sponsored an Egan Clan get together in Canada about 3 years ago, and it was in a town called, drumroll, Eganville, and we were hastily kind of putting the organization together for it.
Sounds like you like spun a globe and you're like there.
Yeah. there's actually, there's a clan committee. I mean, you wouldn't believe this. And they're really well organized. They're super passionate about it. And we were delighted to get involved.
We had a clan committee here running the U.S. government for the last 4 years. Oh, but yeah. It was a different clan. Sorry.
It was a different clan. Yeah, different. But it's sort of the same as like a D versus a T.
Yeah.
I'm trying to stay off politics.
Should have had some in there to help you. But we got these T-shirts. We got these T-shirts made. And the brief was really badly done. Like they sent over the wrong color and everything. And we had all of a sudden that we had like 200 of these T-shirts.
Neon pink.
Neon green. The same color as the Chicago River. And so whenever I think of the Chicago River, I think about those heinous green T-shirts that we got done for the Eganville event. And I just shake my head saying, oh.
Funny enough, the entire city of Eganville is now blinded by the clan of Egans that posed for a picture that day.
They posed for a picture on the bridge, and my wife, who's the first lady of Egans, she was there. She raised the toast in the middle of the bridge, and everyone there had like a shot and just slammed it back. It was brilliant.
Awesome.
Let's get away from the drunkenness of St. Paddy's Day and get into the exquisiteness of the whiskey, Johnny. That's what I want to talk about, because I've mentioned this numerous times on this show. Irish whiskey fascinates me because as a category, it was almost gone. 30 years ago, it was disappearing. There were three or four commercially available whiskeys, certainly here in the United States, and they were all being made at the same distillery, at the Middleton distillery over there.
Yeah,
and
it was all Irish distillers.
It was literally, I don't know if people understand how close that category came to just going away. Had it, you know, I guess Jameson probably had a lot to do with keeping it afloat. Pernod Ricard, right, bought Irish distillers, and that kind of kept it going and allowed you guys, obviously, and brands like you to come in. Now it's just booming. Like, the whiskeys are so good.
They're really good.
Let's talk a little
bit.
This
is really good.
Yeah, your place in that world and just sort of the Irish whiskey category in general.
Right. Well, I couldn't have prefaced it better myself. You know, Irish whiskey is really enjoying a resurgence and a renaissance. And I agree, it was paved by, you know, the likes of Irish distillers with their, you know, their brands like Jameson and Paddy. They're great brands. I think that they did a great job of it. I think the Pernod coming in and buying them, you know, threw some big marketing muscle behind it. But, you know, I think, you know, seeing as we're in the States, you know, the guys like people who from the Dead Rabbit bar, I don't know if you've ever been there in New York.
Jack McGarry's a good friend, yeah.
They did a lot for Irish whiskey as well, you know. I mean, sort of premiumizing it, showing it can be put into cocktails. They did a lot for it.
That lent a lot of weight because their cocktail program is obviously very heavily skewed towards Irish whiskeys and whatnot. And I think that, as you said, Johnny, I think that really kind of woke up the bar community, certainly in America, to start, you know, exploring with Irish whiskey more.
Right, right. And I think, where does Egan's fit in? Well, we're not per se a beer and a shot type whiskey. We're probably more on the premium end of it. So, I mean, while I won't, you know, disparage anybody for shooting a shot of vintage grain, I do it myself, but that's kind of not what we're about. You know, we're about extraordinary tastes. We're about kind of a more, you know, extraordinary, you know, whiskey experience. We do, we have our own customized aging. So just to wind back the clock a little bit, Egan's themselves in the 20th century, in the first half of the 20th century, they weren't distillers. So what they would do is, and I'll try not to bore you too much. They
we'll stop
they
you if you
were
do.
Malting. Please do. Please do. I'll come on to my next toast once you do that. So they were maltsters because they had a big brewing operation. So, you know, what do you need for beer? You need malted barley. And they bought, around my grandfather's time, they bought these by trader barges. And as I mentioned earlier in our podcast, my ancestors, they basically wanted to trade. And so they needed the canals. So they had these barges. And they would bring the malted barley up the canal, up to the mouth of the canal, which is at the Liffey. And there, who do you have there? Well, you have St. James's Gate, Arthur Guinness and Son. You've also got John Power and Son and John Jameson. And what they did was they would trade their malted barley for, you know, LPA proof barrels of whiskey, which and porter, which, as you know, is Guinness Stout. And then bring it back down the canal to Tullamore, where they would customize their own blends. So they would blend, bond, and bottle it, the three Bs.
So I have a question. The recipes that you guys are using nowadays, did you bring them forward from what your five generations back?
Is this an off-the-record answer or an on-the-record
answer? No. Okay. I suppose it depends on what you want to share, but yeah. I mean, obviously you've got some different some different expressions going on, but did you start with what their recipes were? Did you find them? Were you like opening a box somewhere and saying, "Holy shit, we've got some whiskey here."
You know, I've been collecting a little bit of Egan's whiskey, which I've found over the years that, you know, I have different alerts. So when it goes up in an auction, I get it and I try to bid or outbid my cousin or my uncle for them, or twice removed, you know, cousin from Eganville in Canada. But one part of the continuation was that we did have an Egan's 10. And when we got the show back on the road in 2015, we released a 10-year-old single malt. But as Dan knows well from, I think you know quite a bit about the Irish whiskey industry, Dan, you know, back then, you know, we weren't really producing a lot of single malt whiskey. A lot of it was blended whiskey. And a lot of what we're doing right now is pretty, we're trying to be a little bit unconventional. We're trying to, you know, spark a little bit of innovation in the category. We feel that, you know, Irish whiskey didn't always have that, maybe. And so, you know, for example, with our Fortitude.
I was just reading the bottle right now. You guys are finishing it off in, or it's, no, it's aged in exclusively in sherry casks.
Yeah. So, you know, that wasn't really what Irish whiskey was about back at the, you know, in the 20th century. They weren't really doing anything like that.
Right.
They weren't really producing a lot of single malt whiskey at the time. Like I said,
your great, 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 great grandfather wasn't like grabbing sherry casks from Pedro Jimenez. And
no, they were selling sherry. They, believe it or not, they were selling sherry. Yeah. They imported teas from around the world. They imported sherries, cognacs, and all that. But no, they weren't mixing them together. And so that's, you know, kind of what we're trying to do to set things apart. We're continuing what they did in terms of the bottling and the blending, etc. But we're trying to be a bit more experimentative, and you know, that's what people want right now. You know, people want to try something different. You know, if they want to go on the blog, they want to go and see what whiskey nerds are talking about. They want to get a bottle, you know, and, you know, tell their friends, you know, evangelize about something that they just, you know, started tasting and liked.
Well, to that point, Johnny, what's the elevator pit? I got the vintage grain in my glass right now.
As do I.
Is the glass half full or is it half empty?
it's half full.
That's a loaded question.
Ask me on a day when my child didn't wake up at 5 a.m. Yeah.
And by the way, how did we forget this toast? I mean, listen, may you be in heaven a full half hour before the devil knows you're dead. That's a classic Irish toast, right?
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Oh,
there we go. So,
cheers.
Sláinte with the vintage grain. So somebody wants to get an Irish whiskey. You're trying to sell them on Irish whiskey, Johnny. You go try the vintage grain. What sets that apart from other Irish whiskeys? And they said, I've had Jameson. I like Jameson. What's the difference?
Sure. Well, the vintage grain itself has been aged for 8 years in ex-bourbon oak casks, whereas your 3-year-old blend probably hasn't by definition. I think for the US consumer, the vintage grain is quite appealing due to its taste. It's got a little bit of sweetness, but it's also got a little bit of a spice to it. So, you know, I think for the bourbon drinker, that's quite attractive. It also, it works great neat on ice or in cocktails. I mean, the vintage grain makes killer cocktails.
What would be a cocktail?
We're asking the same question. I'm a cocktail hound. Yeah.
I've been hitting a lot of Manhattans with it.
Okay.
Drinking by myself on Friday nights during COVID. You know, they're easier to make. They're very tasty.
Do you get a discount on the Egan's when you're... Do you get a discount? Like, is it expensive?
No, I don't. I don't.
You're paying full freight for this thing?
No, I've actually got friends going because we did this deal with Total Wine now. We did a national deal with Total Wine and More. They're not in Chicago. So I actually have to send emissaries up to Wisconsin or St. Louis to get my Egan's, or have it shipped in, which is totally
my hometown of St. Louis.
Oh yeah, that's right. I think we're about 3 or 4 of the stores down there.
I might have to send a bottle to my dad.
Yeah, absolutely. Tell you what, I'll send it to him. You
give
me his address. I won't do any creepy stuff. I'll say this is from your beloved son. He was thinking of you. How about that?
Look at that.
My goodness.
Hey, wait, look at
that's,
this, man.
That's very generous, score. And my dad will be. So, yeah. So, Dan, put us in touch, please.
I will do it. Johnny, is this a, this is something I often tell people about Irish whiskey, and I want to make sure that I'm not getting it wrong, or maybe disagree with me on this. But if I were to encounter someone who is a neophyte whiskey drinker, I want to start them somewhere, but I don't want to start them somewhere too boring, too bland. But I also don't want to go, hey, try this Octomore. You know, I think about bourbon, but I honestly, for me, I think the great starting point for somebody who really wants to dig whiskey, but it doesn't have a big, you know, history of drinking whiskey, is Irish whiskey, because I feel like it's sort of, you get the best of both there. You know, there's a drinkability to a lot of Irish whiskeys, but there's also a complexity to Irish whiskey that I think is, you're not going to have an Irish whiskey that you could take one sip. There are scotches, and we all know this, where you took one sip, you may never drink whiskey again. If you don't have the palate, you know,
especially if it's too peated,
if you're not ready for that, if you're, you know, like, I mean, some of the Ardbegs, and don't get me wrong, I love those whiskeys, but someone who's a bit hesitant, I think Irish whiskey is the place. I think it's the category where they should start. Would you agree?
I agree. I absolutely agree. And I would try, I would go with the Tully's, you know, the Jameson, you know, sit them down, maybe put a drop of water in there as well. And, you know, don't rush it. Take your time. You know, unfortunately, a lot of us, and this is the occasion with tequila, our introduction was, you know, 11 o'clock at night, you know, trying to slam it down our throat as quickly as possible. Oh, you want to drink whiskey? Sure, drink. And, it, you know, it's people are kind of running for the hills then, you know. But it's only when people kind of slow down and try to appreciate both the taste quotient and then also the provenance behind it as well. Because, you know, the branding is important. The story you're telling is super important. I mean, you're a professional storyteller. You know what I'm talking about here. People need the story. They need to know. They want to be educated. And they want to know, you know, what's the history behind what you're imbibing.
I got to tell you, Johnny, the vintage grain just feels like a quintessential. And I know that you were saying that you guys are trying to do, you know, you're doing it a little different. You're doing something new, but it feels like a quintessential, approachable, beautifully well-balanced Irish whiskey to me.
Yeah,
like the bottle itself and the way it sips and the way that it sort of washes over, it feels very like it invites you in a very wonderful way. Like it's just kind of nice.
That's a huge compliment. Thank you so much.
The bottle is so great. And
yeah,
when I was over there, Johnny, last year, I went up to Belfast for McConnell's whiskey.
Okay.
What's that very famous whiskey bar in Belfast? You know what I'm talking about?
I'm sorry, it's escaping me now, but I was actually only up in Belfast there about 3 years ago.
Anyway, when I was there, I remember marveling at the back bar, and they had Egan's in there as well, but just how great these labels looked, you know. And this vintage grain label to me just has soul, you know. It just has a lot of soul to it, you know. It's
but there's something about it that like it just feels like it harkens back to it doesn't feel like a brand that's been around for, you were saying, 6 years now. Like it feels like a bottle that's been around for six generations.
That's right. And
which
that,
is
that
wonderful,
like, you know, that you thought that bottle has been on the shelf for generations. That's kind of what we were hoping to achieve with that.
No, it feels like it, man.
What's the retail on that, the vintage grain, do you know, over here, Johnny?
So, you know, unfortunately, it just really depends what state you're in because of the taxes.
General,
but,
ballpark.
Yeah, you'll get it for around 25
Jesus,
to 30.
That's great.
That's fantastic.
In total wine. Yeah, they're pricing it really aggressively.
Now, what about this one?
I don't want to live in New York. That's, nobody knows what that is, Dan, because you have that false background.
What about the Fortitude? I want to try this Fortitude. I have not tried it. Tell us a little bit about this one, Johnny.
Sure. Yeah. So this is, it's 100% single malt. It's aged exclusively in the Pedro Ximenez sherry casks. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, on the nose, you obviously get quite a whiff of sherry off the bat. And then on the palate, you know, the raisins, sultanas, a bit of marzipan as well. But it's got that, you know, it's a single malt, so it's got that nice, a little bit of creaminess, you know, as it goes down, a lot of heat, but there's definitely no burn. But I mean, that's my go-to right now is probably the Fortitude. Vintage grain on Friday nights and Fortitude on Saturday nights, you know.
Special occasions.
How long has Fortitude been available in market?
It's been available now probably about two years here in North America.
And this is a little bit higher price point than the vintage grain?
Yeah, this is just a bit shy of $50. So it'd be kind of, again, depending on what state you're in, it could even be as low as 35, between 35 and 45 bucks.
Man, the nose on this is wonderful. Really just, to me, it's evocative of being in a distillery. Actually, you get that great cereal grain notes going on there that you always smell when you're in the distillery. And by the way, that's another thing I want to point out to anybody listening. When the time comes that you can get there, go to Ireland, because it's just starting now. Like, they're starting to bring distilleries are starting to come back into Dublin, certainly. And I wanted to ask you that, Johnny. What's going on with you guys with that whole situation over there with your own facilities?
Well, you know, to answer your question, I'll say we're doing what we did originally, you know, with my forefathers, in terms of, you know, sourcing great whiskeys, aging them, you know, by ourselves, and then, you know, doing the blending, bonding, and bottling. That's what we've always done. Now, if we're going to change that narrative, that would be a big sit down between our family and Intrepid. But I wouldn't write it off. I think that there's been a deluge of brands, you know, over the last few years. I think there's 26 distilleries or something that have opened on the island of Ireland. And unfortunately, I don't think there's a market for 26 distilleries, unfortunately. So I don't know. I mean, we'll have a look at where we are.
Could you do a tasting room? Are you able to do that in Ireland?
Yeah, we are definitely looking at that right now. I don't want to say too much more, but yeah, we are.
Johnny's going to hit me up after we cut all of this out, please.
Cut it out, Dan. I can't talk about this.
But yeah, no, absolutely. It's part of the plan. You know, I mean, you know, when we started off, we didn't want to bite it off more than we could chew. You know, we didn't want to be investing telephone numbers in something that was unproven, right? But we're 5 years now into it. We had record sales last year. We were 76% up year on year last year.
A lot of people were buying booze last year.
A lot of booze. And they weren't just drinking on Fridays and Saturdays. They were drinking earlier in the week as well, right?
I can attest to that.
Yeah, me too, unfortunately. But it was a good time last year for the off-premise. Sadly, not so much for the on-premise.
Yeah.
You know, my heart goes out to a lot of the amazing bartenders and service staff out there. We're a really, really tough year. So to answer your original question, we don't want to bite off more than we can chew. We're in the development of the brand, development of the company. We probably will get there to the tasting room. Distillery, I don't know. Come back to me in a couple of years' time.
Okay.
Stop pressuring him, Dan.
I'm sorry.
God damn it.
Let's raise a toast here with the Fortitude.
I'm on the toast. It's me.
Oh,
it's
you
me.
Got one now, me. Finally. Okay.
I did. I was just doing that.
You looked it up, didn't you? You Googled.
Thank God.
You
Googled.
Guys who know me. No, I actually didn't. But guys who know me know that.
I see your eyes going to the left. I can tell you Googled. That's fine. Well,
my son showed up a second ago.
Okay.
So, never lie, cheat, steal, or drink. By the way, I'd like to dedicate this to Eamon Collins, who taught me this toast. Never lie, cheat, steal, or drink. But if you do lie, make sure you lie in the arms of somebody beautiful. If you cheat, may you cheat death. If you steal, may you steal from the English. But if you drink, may you drink with Colin and Dan.
There we go.
I love it.
Cheers, fellas. Sláinte.
Sláinte. Folks, I've never admitted this on the show before, but I'm a guy. Yeah, it's true. And as a guy, I'm here to tell you that so much of our identity is wrapped up in our hair. That's why when we get into our 20s and 30s and start noticing the first signs of hair loss, it definitely feels like panic time. Thankfully, now there's Keeps, the simple and easy way to keep your hair. Treatments start at just $10 per month. Plus, for a limited time, you can get your first month free. That's right, free. Go to keeps.com/drinking to receive your first month of treatment for free. Take care of your hair, and your hair will take care of you.
Hey, this is Tiffany Thiessen, and you're listening to What We're Drinking with Dan Dunn.
And the other one I wanted to touch on when you were talking about how America, we've bastardized things with shots and everything else. Forget about the Jameson. The craziest one of all time was the Irish car bomb. Invented. Invented by an American in Stanford, Connecticut. Charles Oat, I think his name was. So, think of the balls. Like, it's like, let's appropriate three of the most popular adult beverages in Ireland. We'll take the Guinness, we'll take the Baileys, and we'll take the Jameson. Let's take those things, right? Yeah. Let's name it after an act of terrorism. And they did this thing. And I, when I was young, I'm going to admit I was guilty. And then until I educated myself, and I go, what the fuck? Like, this would be like if some cheeky Irish guy opened a pub in the shadows of where the World Trade Center used to be and was like, let's get Budweiser and Beam and call it the down. You know, how offensive is that to you, the Irish car bomb thing?
I mean, I think there's, cultural appropriation, for everything.
And which expression of vegans would we use if we were swapping it? No, I'm just kidding.
I mean, it would just be too expensive to do, to be honest. I mean, I'm not totally against
Johnny's
it.
Johnny's offended that they're using Jameson and not, no, I'm kidding. But
it'd be for depletions, but
sales are sales, man, but anyway, go ahead. I cut you off.
Yeah. No, not at all. Not at all. I mean, listen, have I had an Irish car bomb? Of course I have. I take it in jest. Is it ideal? No, it's not.
Does it hurt a little bit every time you take one? Like, I mean, in the past, did you take one and you were like, fuck off.
Fourth one, right?
Can't we just rename it? It's not a bad, it's a fun thing to do.
It's a fun drink, but like, can we?
Let's brainstorm. Let's brainstorm.
If we come up with a name for the, okay, so I get the, they're thinking like detonator bomb because they're dropping it in. What about the teardrop or
it's falling into a pool of dark matter, right?
Shane McGowan's teeth. How about that?
Ooh, I don't think anyone would probably want to drink it then.
Oh, but it could be a pogue bomb.
His mouth is a pool of dark matter. I'm just saying, or at least it was.
You know what? Call it the zombie, right? Everyone loves zombie, the tune by...
But there's already a drink called the zombie.
There is a zombie.
Yeah, it's a tropical drink, the zombie.
What's the Pogues New Year's Eve, Christmas?
Oh, the fairy tale.
Why don't you call it Fairy Tale in New York?
Yeah, Fairy Tale Chicago, or just the fairy tale.
The fairy tale.
Yeah. All right, that's so much
fairy
more...
Tale, guys.
I think we literally just saved.
Let's trademark that before the end of the show.
That sounds like a pleasant drink to have.
I mean, look, Johnny, I'm going to put this on you because I think you have a better business mind than either Dan or I. So if you could trademark that by the end of this show, that'd be great.
I want to get to another whiskey here, Johnny. The Legacy Reserve. This is the stuff right here, right? This is a little bit higher up the...
Yes, price. This is our most premium expression.
What is this? What's a bottle of this going to set somebody back?
It's around 100 right now. The original LR1s, Legacy Reserve 1 and Legacy Reserve 2, are around anywhere between $120 and $150.
Okay.
So right now, I mean, if you can get your hands on this, it's a limited edition, go and buy it, And, even if you don't open it up and drink it, if you hold on to it for a few years, it's going to only increase in value,
I've tried that with other whiskeys. It doesn't work because the bottle ends up getting opened.
Well, that's true. Once you pop.
Johnny, Colin's been out of practice a little bit as the East Coast co-host. Let's see if he's still got his game. Colin, I would like you to please take a sip of the Legacy Reserve and on the spot in front of Johnny, I, God, and the world, give us your tasting notes. Here we go. He's nosing it right now. He looks intent.
Look, I'm gonna preface this by saying that Dan has already established that my wife is a super taster. She is the type of woman who will go, she'll go to a tasting. She will come up with the most bizarre fucking descriptor of anything that she's tasting, whether it is a liquor or a wine. Usually it's wine if we're doing a tasting. But she is spot on. She's like, that tastes like the Band-Aid that you ripped off of a four-day-old scab. And chances are, she was right. It's delicious, but she's spot on. She's like, I taste a little bit of caramel and a toothbrush that sat out too long after brushing your teeth without washing it off. And you're like, oh, yeah, I got
Johnny,
it.
Johnny, am I the only one here that thinks that our East Coast co-host is trying to buy himself some time to come up with some descriptors?
You know what I was going to say? I was going to say that I have to say, I think women, honestly, they've got a better sense of taste than we do, honestly.
Oh, like, they do. No, that's scientifically proven.
So if you could, if you have that tool and you've also, you know, got the articulation of Patty, I mean...
She's
right.
She has a way with words. Let's
guess what
that way.
You're about to find out. He does not have the articulation.
No, I don't.
Here we go. Something tells me.
tell me.
This is not going to be as impressive.
I'm stalling for time.
Colin, talk to me about the Cadillac casks.
Tell me about the Cadillac casks first. What kind of notes come out of the Cadillac casks?
It's a white dessert wine made from Baturicate vines on the hillsides of Bordeaux. And it was, we finished it, I think it was either 3 months or 6 months. Can't quite remember. But I have only had a smidgen of this. We were supposed to get more, but due to COVID, we didn't get more over here. So the onus is on you to give us the tasting notes, man, because I have not tasted it yet.
I mean, the fact is, Johnny, I need more. But no, it is delicious. There is a wonderful roundness to it. There's Dan, what are you getting?
Wonderful roundness.
Well, I was doing a tasting in Boston one time, and I'd had a couple of drinks, and the crowd were a lot of fun to work with and to talk to, and it was very interactive. And I said, well, this whiskey, I wanted to tell you a little bit about the Legacy Reserve. Yes, please tell us, Jonathan. The word I would use for this one is it's very Moorish. It's what? It's very Moorish. Ooh, and everyone's looking at me like as if they know what I'm talking about. Well, can you explain what Moorish is? Yeah, you just want to drink more and more and more and more.
I'm going to use that anytime Dan puts me on the spot from now
just
on.
No, it's very Moorish. It's very Moorish. My dad always had the best get out of jail. Dad, how's that wine or whiskey tasting? Or how's it drinking? Son, it's drinking very well. Yeah, so that was always his get out of jail.
Mine is usually, it tastes like whiskey. It really does have like a nice fullness to it. It's got some butter on it. It's got some caramel notes on it. It's
our finest yet. Absolutely it is. The Legacy Reserve 3 is definitely the best of the three of them. I mean, get out there and buy it if you can find it. Unfortunately, it hasn't been evenly distributed. It's a limited run, I think, of 1,000 bottles, third of which are in Europe, 2/3 are here in North America. So if you can get it,
sad that
it.
I don't have a full bottle. That's all I'm sad about.
Man,
there you go.
May you live as long as you want and never want as long as you live. See?
Indeed.
Colin, what do you got? Come on, keep up.
Oh, Jesus. I did look this up. Hold on. May the best day of your past be the worst day of your future.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Boom.
That's pretty good. Johnny, you got to take us out. You are the true Irishman here.
All right. You know what? I don't have a toast, but all the cancel culture out there right now, I did like the Dr. Seuss one about matter and mind, right? You know,
we're hitting all the hot topics on this show. Real Family, you know, Dr. Seuss.
Don't mind those.
Ku Klux Klan.
Don't matter. Because of those matter, don't mind. How about that?
Okay.
There you go.
Here we go. Schlauncher. Here's the thing. When we do this again, I hope and pray we can do it in person, either preferably in Dublin or in Ireland. But if we have to pinch hit, we can go to Eganesville. right? We can always go to Egan's Mill for that. But I would prefer to do it in Ireland, and we will drink plenty of Egan's whiskey, but we'll also have a fairy tale contest. Stay on brand here. Who can drink the fairy tales the quickest? Johnny, do you want people to find you on social media? Because if you do, you can tell us where.
Sure. I'm at Jonathan Egan. I'm not a voracious poster like that. But please do add Egan's Whiskey on that handle, Egan's Irish Whiskey, Egan's Whiskey. We're on Instagram. We're on Facebook. We're available at Total Wines and More in the United States of America. I don't know who else is listening here, but please go on a website to try and find where you can find our whiskeys.
There's a guy. There's one guy in Bolivia. And I think there's a woman in Fiji that listens as well. So yeah,
there's somebody in Tangier.
Yeah,
no, she died. Yeah, unfortunately, she passed away.
So it's just the guy in Bolivia.
I just got word.
Yeah,
that's
invite them all over to Dublin then. You know, maybe later this year when we have the Egan's Classic.
I'm not joking. You. A few weeks ago, I reached number 7 on the Irish podcast charts. So I'm big in Ireland. I'm just saying that was the Bryan Cranston episode. Maybe the Colin Donnell thing will do this for us. So, Colin, where do people find you?
I doubt it. I'm so sorry.
I doubt it, too, after that poor display of tasting notes. No, I'm kidding. You're the best, man.
You? Fuck off.
Where do people find you on the social media? At Colin Donnell, right? That's it.
That's right. Just my name.
Maybe you and I will do a stereo this week. Thursday,
I hope so.
8 o'clock Eastern, we might be on stereo. Johnny Egan, Colin Donnell. This has been a real pleasure. I've loved having you on, and right back, or maybe we won't. I don't know. I'll figure it out. Maybe I'll just throw some music on the end, and that'll be the end of the show.